Good morning, my friends, and welcome to yet another incredible installment of Morning Reload. From very high above all the puerile and vacuous forms of Wyoming mainstream media, this is Cowboy State Politics. I, of course, am your illustrious host, David Iverson, firmly and permanently ensconced behind the silver Cowboy State Politics microphone and broadcasting to you from the base of the Bighorns at the Cowboy State Politics Northern Command Studio in Sheridan, Wyoming. Good morning, my friends, and welcome to the program. Happy Monday. We begin this morning with a little baseball. The Houston Astros were taught a valuable lesson last night. It's not a very good idea to bean Adolis Garcia, intentionally or otherwise. In the top of the eighth inning, Garcia gave Mr. Rawlings the ride of the evening in a grand slam, putting the Rangers up by 6 runs. The final score of last night's Game 6 of the National League Championship Series was 9-3. This means everything's tied up and we're heading for Game 7. It'll be played tonight at Minute Maid Park in Houston. The Astros are the only team in baseball that has a losing record at home. Certainly bodes well for my Texas Rangers. As I was celebrating their monstrous victory, I happened upon a little baseball clip from none other than Rinaldus Magnus. Today's program is going to be just a little bit gloomy, so I thought that we should start off the program with a little humor. Here you go, Ronald Reagan himself at a Cubs baseball game.
I remember you telling the story of one you called off the teletype.
You mean the one where I called a game that wasn't going on?
That's right, sir.
Yes, it was the ninth inning, Cubs and Cards, 0-0. And the wire went dead. I was doing a telegraphic report. Billy Jurgis at the plate. So I decided that maybe I'd take a chance, and I had him foul one. And then I had him foul another one. Then I had him foul one. It was almost a home run. And then I described the two kids that got one that he fouled back a third. Well, I went on till I was setting a world record for foul balls. And they did finally get the wire fixed while I still had him at the plate. And the first word that came into me was that he popped out on the first ball pitch.
Most exciting game I've ever heard. How do you see this, sir?
Well, this is a great ball game and a great pitcher's duel that is going on out there.
How do you maintain your neutrality?
It ain't easy. But I realize I can't have favorites anymore.
Mr. President, thank you so much for joining us.
Well, how
indeed.
Well, my pleasure. Good to be.
The great Ronald Reagan, my friends. Today's broadcast is brought to you by New Trend Hats. It's about to be winter, in case you didn't know. And while you're out shoveling the walk from the first snow that's apparently supposed to happen sometime later this week, you should probably keep that head of yours nice and warm. Shoveling the walk is an unpleasant enough experience. There's no reason why you should have cold ears while you're doing it. New Trend Hats has a wide variety of hats for both men and women, and you're sure to find one to fit your particular style. So go to their website, newtrendhats.com. We begin this morning with that oversized, overfunded, and over-self-important political blog known as Wyofile. In an article entitled, Wyoming 988 Suicide Hotline is performing well, but it faces a fiscal cliff, the subtitle of which is, quote, "The Suicide and Crisis Lifeline has helped an increasing number of people since its launch in July of 2022, yet faces funding uncertainties at the upcoming budget session," end quote. First, I don't know of anybody who would argue against the merits of the 988 suicide hotline. Wyoming does rate, per capita, number one in the country for suicides, and it's almost across all categories. It breaks my heart every single time I read an article about a young person taking their life. Several of my dear friends have had that happen in their own families. And I have to believe that most of us would give almost anything if we could prevent some family from having to go through that. When I was a resident assistant at Sheridan College in 1998, I had to deal with a suicide attempt. It's one of the most vivid experiences of my entire life. Thank God somebody said something to me and that I was in my room studying and didn't have to be in class that morning. Fortunately, I was able to talk the young lady into handing over the knife, and everything turned out okay. So I do know a bit about this subject. From the Wildfile piece of Emotional Drivel, and I quote, Katrina Farrell helps people in crisis. As program coordinator for the 988 Suicide and Crisis Lifeline, she assists callers who may be feeling desperate or despondent. The Lifeline provides free emotional support and resources day and night. Quote, I think we make a really big difference in a lot of lives, she said. For years, Wyoming has struggled with one of the nation's worst suicide rates, and for years it did so without a lifeline staffed by local folks. That's no longer the case. Wyoming is now home to a pair of call centers that are available 24/7. Anecdotally, and that's the key word right there, my friends, anecdotally, there are indications the lifelines are helping. Farrell knows this because sometimes people who use the service call back. Quote, they'll call in and they'll say, I was really in an awful spot yesterday and you really got me through. And thank you for the resources. End quote, she said. It's really great to get that kind of feedback. But the program faces funding concerns. Right now, it's paid for primarily through federal COVID relief dollars. But those are expected to lapse after June of 2025. End quote. Here's the problem with this sort of thing. The vast majority of people who successfully commit suicide never tell anybody about it. And secondly, there's no way to determine if someone calls the suicide hotline, if they're actually serious about doing something, or if they just need somebody to talk to. There's no way to quantify any of it. If you have a program that's going to spend taxpayer dollars, then you have to be able to quantify it somehow. And in this situation, there's absolutely no way to do that. The biggest problem with government programs is accountability. If you're spending taxpayer dollars, you have to be able to show a return on investment. And if you can't do that, there's no way to hold government officials who manage the program accountable for what they're doing. They could just say the old ridiculous claim, if we've saved just one life, then it's worth it. Now, that argument might be persuasive for some people, but if you have a brain and think about it, it's absolutely ridiculous. When politicians say, if it saves just one life, then it's worth it, it appears that they care very deeply about the subject, while simultaneously absolving themselves of any culpability in the matter. It absolves them of having to create an actual response to a difficult issue. It allows them to trade on emotions instead of facts. Think about it. If we really believed that any law is justified if it saves just one life, we would require all Americans pass a mental health evaluation on a regular basis or be institutionalized. After all, more than 38,000 Americans commit suicide annually. We would outlaw all motor vehicles. Almost 35,000 Americans die in vehicle accidents every year. We would require that all houses be single-story structures. More than 26,000 people die annually from falls. We would ban alcohol because almost 17,000 people die every year from alcohol-related liver disease. We would require people to be certified as swimmers before allowing them to approach any large body of water. More than 3,500 people die drowning every year. We would prohibit women from getting pregnant unless they had no family history of birth complications because about 900 American women die every year in childbirth. Of course, none of these things will ever happen, nor should they. Life is full of dangers that cannot be legislated away, and any politician that claims that they're doing so is lying to you. Or they just lack the mental capacity to come up with any other sort of argument to fleece you of your money. Last year's House Bill 65 was one such idiotic bill that was proposed by the Revenue Committee. I say that it's idiotic for two reasons. First, the very suggestion that government could prevent anybody from killing themselves is preposterous on face. Far more people kill themselves every single year because of government, and not the reverse. Secondly, it was absolutely an attempt to steal $46 million from you. What the bill would have done is set up a trust fund, or what they call a trust fund, which in reality is actually a coffee can. One of these little places that they stash a whole bunch of money where they can go and grab it for future use. That's a favorite trick of Redcoat former Speaker of the House Steve Harshman. In Wyoming, there are over 600 of these coffee cans that the legislature has set up so that they can hide money here or there for one of their pet projects. The classic example of one of these is the $91 million that was put into a trust fund to build a new prison. Not only do we not have a new prison, we don't have $91 million to pay for it. But that was put into a trust fund to make sure that that money was guaranteed. So, House Bill 65 was going to put $46 million into a trust fund. Well, actually, $40 million. Technically, they were going to put $40 million into the trust fund, and then there was another $6 million for operating expenses. Take a listen to how former Redcoat Speaker of the House Steve Harshman explained how this whole trust fund thing was going to work. This soundbite is from January 12th in the House Revenue Committee. Get a load of this.
Or save some money and just let it work for us forever. And maybe I've said that in a biased way, but it is saving money. I mean, we're not spending $46 million, we're saving $46 million.
Did you hear the people laughing in the background? They know that Steve Harshman's full of crap. And correct me if I'm wrong, but if you take a pile of money and you put it somewhere else for some other purpose and you can't use it for anything other than that, isn't that spending money? Evidently not according to the twisted world of Steve Harshman. In the end, the legislature voted not to put $46 million of your money into a so-called trust fund that wouldn't be used for the 988 hotline sometime in the future. Instead, they allowed it to continue to be funded with COVID dollars and created a trust fund with no money in it so that private entities could donate money to the 988 hotline. So that's the first point. That the assertion that the government can do anything effectively is preposterous on face, and good job for them voting not to spend a truckload of our money doing it. Here's what Representative John Baer had to say on the subject on the floor of the House a few days after that Revenue Committee meeting.
And I, too, find it curious about this trust fund. I want to remind the body that we have a responsibility to appropriate the funds of the state, and we continue to move these things off budget by creating these trust funds, and they become automatically funded. There may be very good reasons for automatically funding something, but we must remember our responsibility is to approve those funds on a regular basis, biannually actually. Once it's in a trust fund, we will not see that. In committee, I brought an amendment which failed to remove that part, and I still think that's an important thing for us to think about as a body, as to whether we want to continue to move things off the budget to where we cannot perform our responsibility as legislators and fund all of the state's functions through our approvals on a biannual basis.
Exactly right. So it's not that the legislature didn't want to fund the 988 hotline. It's that a large number of them didn't want to set up an independent trust fund that removed all accountability from it. You can go back and listen to the floor debate on YouTube. It happened between January 12th and January 25th. To find the specific days, go to wildledge.gov, look up House Bill 65, and then go to the digest on the bill, and you can look through all the floor debates and find whatever date that you want to listen to. The larger point on the 988 hotline is that this is not the role of government. Governments were not set up to keep you safe. They're set up to protect your liberty, but not your personal safety. And any assertion that the government can keep you safe is fallacious from the very beginning. There is absolutely no justification for the federal government, the state government, or city government, or any other type of government to be involved in healthcare. The only place that it's mentioned in the Wyoming Constitution is Article 1, Section 38, and that refers to your liberty to make your own healthcare decisions. It absolutely doesn't say anything about the government managing your healthcare for you. And frankly, the only way that the government could prevent suicide is if the government ceased to exist. And really, a lot of the things we think are the role of government, which they definitely are not, are better managed by the private sector. Churches, private charities, nonprofits, not an overgrown, bloated government. One last comment on that idiotic political blog. It's not that the 988 hotline faces a fiscal cliff. They're currently funded through 2025. What they don't want to do is have to go to the legislature each and every year to ask for an appropriation. That way, they have to justify what it is that they're doing. And if you read through the entirety of the article, there's no actual solid numbers that the 988 hotline staff could provide. The only thing the article really mentioned was anecdotal evidence, which, of course, is not evidence at all. I'm not saying that the 988 hotline doesn't have merit. I'm sure that it absolutely helps people. The question here is who should be in charge of it. Certainly not the government. Remember that the only people that could lose money running a whorehouse is the government. No, really, that actually happened in Nevada. Well, that'll about do it for today's installment of Morning Reload. Have a good week, and we'll talk again on Wednesday. Remember, you can catch my live program every weekday from 9 to 11 on the Independence Network. But for now, from the base of the Bighorns, at the Cowboy State Politics Northern Command Studio in Sheridan, Wyoming, I'm David Iverson, and this is the one and only Cowboy State Politics.